You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
You're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. On today's episode, episode number 264, entitled, How to Reinvent Yourself by Doing Inner Work, Using Plant Medicines, and Tapping into Different States of Consciousness, I chat with Tucker Max. Tucker Max is a New York Times bestselling author of 4 books, including I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell, and the co-founder of Scribe Media. In today's episode, Tucker talks about transforming his life around in the past couple of decades and what it took for him to truly feel happy and fulfilled as opposed to just successful. Tucker dives into everything from psychedelic medicines to energy work to traditional therapy to the law of attraction and so much more. In fact, we get very deep into a number of profound topics and cover a myriad of fascinating topics regarding health, spirituality, and happiness. If you're wondering how to reinvent yourself like Tucker Max, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. If you want to get more content, more information, and extra bonuses I don't post anywhere else, make sure you follow me on Instagram right now. It's at Justin Stenstrom. That's JustinStenstrom. I'm posting pretty much every day throughout the week, most days out of the week for sure, but almost every day. And it's all kinds of information regarding health, wealth, business, life, dating, relationships, confidence, and so much more. I'm telling you, you're going to love seeing some of the stories I post about and the feed posts I post all the time. It's pretty interesting. It's pretty fun. I'm loving Instagram right now, so make sure you follow me, Instagram.com/Justin Stenstrom, or just jump on your phone right now, pull up the Instagram app, and it's at Justin Stenstrom. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from Elite Man Magazine, and my guest today is Tucker Max, the author of the famous book, I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell, and the owner of the new company, Scribe, which helps new authors actually write the book and then become publishing authors. Tucker, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, I'm excited, man. I've been a big fan of your work for a long time. What are you up to these days, and how have you changed in the past couple of years?
Very different questions. So what I'm up to now is, I have a family, 3 kids, and a company that's like, we just passed 50 people full-time and 170 part-time. And we have like a real CEO that runs it, and we're well into the 8 figures and growing fast, moved into a new huge office. So those 2 things pretty much are most of my time, my family and my company. Then how have I changed? Well, I'm 44 now. I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell came out when I was 30. So, dude, the last 14 years, I have gone from, like, when I was 30, I was the good side of me at 30. I was super fun, no responsibilities, no cares in the world, hilarious. Like if you were going to go out and for a night to drink and pick up girls, like I was the dude you wanted with me, right? I wrote all the time. Like I was a writer. And all I cared about was like making people laugh and like a very carefree kind of spirit, right? That was a good side. I don't want to say the bad side, but the side that I've had to work on since then, I was very emotionally disconnected. I had all kinds of trauma and issues that I had not even begun to understand or address. I was, and all like partying and drinking and hooking up with girls, all very cool, right? But the level and the degree to which I did it, it's not even that they're necessarily unhealthy. It's just that, like, when you're doing that, it's usually because you're running from something, right? Just like people can use success as a way to avoid stuff or drug addiction or whatever. I used, you know, women and mainly just women, like, because I didn't even drink that much, honestly. Like, I just drank only to the extent that I needed to get girls. And so I was running from a lot of my issues, right? And so after the book came out, and, you know, like, big success, and then grew and grew, and then a movie, and then, you know, all these bestsellers and whatever. It's like, when you first start off, dude, you think, okay, there's like a level of rich, there's a level of success you think, well, when I get there, I'll be happy, right? And I was like 5X that level, right? So I was way past what I ever thought I needed to be happy. And like, it, listen, having rich or having money and being rich and having some fame is way better than being poor and broke and anonymous and hungry. Like, that is, anyone who tells you that everything about being rich is awful, they're either a liar or a fool. But it's nowhere near as great as you think it is when you're poor and broke, right? What you realize is that, yeah, it's cool to be able to go buy whatever you want and whatever, but like, that all of that wears off. The novelty of money and all that stuff wears off. And then you realize that you're sitting in a much nicer apartment with much better food and much better clothes and maybe cooler friends and a hotter girlfriend or whatever, but like, you're still basically the same person, right? So if you were miserable before, you're miserable now. If you were happy before, you're probably happy now about. And I wasn't miserable, but I just wasn't, like, I wasn't that happy, right? And what I didn't really understand at the time, man, is I actually had a lot of sadness and a lot of loneliness that I just had never unpacked, mostly from my childhood. And so I had it built. I mean, like anything, man, you hold the lid down on a boiling pot long enough, it blows up. And it might blow up for me, but it was just like, man, this sucks. And so I started therapy, like, just talk therapy, and like, it was pretty good, man. Like, it was the first I went for 4 years, and I really got a great map of my emotions. And I started to understand myself, what I was feeling, why I was feeling that way, that kind of stuff. And I felt way better. And then I eventually stopped because it kind of stopped working. And then I did a few other things. Like, I tried a lot of stuff, but most of it's bullshit, like yoga. Like, I don't understand. Yoga is like a shitty workout and shitty meditation, but somehow when you combine them, it's good. That never made sense to me. It doesn't. But some people love it, so bless their heart. But I tried a bunch of other stuff. And then about a year and a half ago, I found something that has just absolutely changed the game for me, which has been plant medicines, right? So, and I mean that in the broad sense. So I started with MDMA therapy, and I don't do this stuff I never did it recreationally, and nothing against it, but I just never did. I did MDMA therapy about 5-6 times. It was remarkable, man. That, like, I never knew I could feel all those emotions and love and all this sort of stuff. It kind of cracked me open. And then I started adding psilocybin and LSD therapy. And it's like, dude, I feel like the Buddha now, which of course I'm not, man. I'm not even approaching that, right? But I compared to how I was even 2, 3, 4 years ago, I just feel so much calmer, so much happier, so much more content, so much more, like, all the shit inside of me that was struggling to get out, I've let a lot of it up and out. Probably not all of it. No, definitely not all of it, but a lot of it. And it's just like, it almost feels like I was carrying a huge backpack on, and then I just dropped it. And now it's like, oh God, I had no idea I could feel this light. That's how I've changed.
So there's a lot there. Just on the last point, and I want to touch back on a couple of the other things you mentioned, but the plant therapy, the MDMA, psilocybin, the LSD. I mean, I've heard things like Joe Rogan and some other guys talking about that kind of stuff. I've had guests on the show as well in the past who've done that, tried it, loved it in many regards. Many of them in many cases have loved it. I think a few of them didn't really get much out of it, but I think most people have. What is that like? Are we talking about like hallucinogenic experiences, like seeing things out of body kind of shit? Like, does it change your whole perspective after that point forward? Or is it more just a way to you to slowly kind of tap into some of those emotions and then, you know, do therapy with like a talk therapist?
Right. It's a great question. It depends on the medicine. So like I people say plant medicines, but like they're all very different. So MDMA is basically, it's a form of methamphetamine, although it's not really like meth. Don't worry about that. But like it, what it does is it triggers your brain to dump all serotonin. And so like, you just feel incredible. You feel this overwhelming love. Like, dude, the first time I did it, like, and it hit, like, I had no idea I could feel that much love. Like I had never felt. And at this point I was married with a wife. And at that point, two kids.
Yeah.
And like, and I loved my wife and I loved my kids. And like, I had never felt anything like this. And dude, you feel so safe and so content and so open. And so what it does is all the stuff that like you have that's hard to access or like it comes up then because it's like, oh, okay. It's a safe place for me to be processed. So like, you know, like, for me, I had a lot of stuff come up with my parents, like conversations I wanted to have or things they said that hurt my feelings that I hadn't thought about before, just like whatever, all this shit, man. And then I was able to like kind of deal with it and then let it go. Right. So it was like all this emotional stuff came up and it was MDMA is used basically exclusively for therapy, right? For dealing with emotions and for processing them and letting go. Right. Now psilocybin, which like mushrooms, can kind of be used for both. Right. And LSD is the same. It can be used for therapy or mind. Let's call it mind expansion. I've done one really big mushroom session. I did an 8.5 gram session, which is an insane amount, but I was with like a very experienced mushroom shaman and this dude really knew his stuff. And dude, that was not, I know I got a lot out of it therapeutically, but that was the type of shit where like, man, like I was like saw God and shit, like all the crazy stuff you hear about on psychedelics. Yeah. Like I went through all of it, man, flying through space and re-evolving and being like an oyster and like, dude, crazy, shit. Right. And dude, it totally changed how I thought. What mushrooms do at the core is they reset a part of your brain called the default mode network, which is like, the easy way to think of it is like the habits in your brain, right? This is kind of a simplistic explanation. And so like what I realized after that session especially is like, there's a certain argument my wife and I used to always have. After mushrooms, like the argument came up, the event came up, and there was no anger or energy behind it for me. And so like, that's kind of like an example of like mushrooms essentially cut all the, like if you have patterns or habits, especially bad ones or ones that aren't serving you, mushrooms essentially erase those. And then they give you an opportunity to form new habits, right? Yeah. It makes it very easy for you to form new habits. Now you can go have the same argument again and you'll reform the same habit. So they're not, none of this stuff is a magic pill that does any of the work for you. You still have to like feel the emotions and do the work. But like my wife and I don't have that argument anymore because like whatever was triggering me about that, like I've just let it all go because it's like a silly argument. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And then dude, like with LSD, man, it was very visual and crazy. But that too, man, LSD like is harsh. And it really just showed me a lot of truths about myself, like things that I do that are like harmful or counterproductive to what I want. But it was like, I don't know if you've ever had a friend who's like totally brutally honest, almost like in a mean way. Like they're not mean, but they're so brutally honest that it kind of feels mean. Dude, that's what my LSD session felt like. It's like the meanest shit, but like not trying to be mean. It's just like, oh, look, remember this? When this happened, you were a fucking asshole. Look at that. And then like it shows you what, like at least for me, it showed me like some of the things I did or I've done from other angles. And I'm like, oh no, that you're right. I was a fucking asshole. Why did I do that? And so like, but then you're able to like, okay, like I get it. You're able to kind of process it, let it go, and then be like, okay, I'm not going to do that again. I don't want to act like that. Right. Or if you do, you can just keep doing it. But plant medicines are not for everybody, dude, but they're really good for people who are at a point in their life where it's like, I want to heal my past stuff and I want to maybe explore more of myself. And dude, I haven't taken the crazy medicines like ayahuasca and 5-MeO-DMT and that kind of stuff. I haven't done that. That shit like is where you're like you're really out there and you're really doing mind expansive stuff. And like I haven't done any of that yet. I probably will eventually, But for me, I use it as this stuff, at least right now, as therapeutic tools. And it's been amazing.
Yeah. You know who else was on the show too about a year ago that did this, that was kind of actually surprising? It was Dorian Yates. You've probably heard of him, the Mr. Olympia six-time champ.
Yeah, right.
He was doing all this stuff and it completely changed his life. He did the ayahuasca too. And his whole perspective on everything changed after that. And he's actually big into recreational marijuana use now. And also is like a vegan, which is surprising. The dude used to weigh like 280, obviously, and just jacked. Now he's like probably 220, but like still muscular, but like really skinny compared to what he used to be. And he's a vegan, which is fucking nuts. But I mean, there's a lot.
It'll change your mind about a lot of things.
And another guy came on the show too a couple of years ago. He was actually microdosed on LSD while he was doing the interview. And we did like a 3-hour interview. He was this doctor from Asia. Ted Achikoso is his name. He's a brilliant guy. But he was like very giggly and like laughing and like during the interview, but he was just like so coherent and everything he said made so much sense and he was on point. But I guess he did it all the time, like probably 2-3 times a week, small microdoses of LSD. I don't know if these are things that you do regularly or if it's just once in a while type of shit.
I do both. So I microdose psilocybin. I tried microdosing LSD. I didn't like it.
Yeah.
Microdosing psilocybin works great for me. He sounds like he may have taken a little too much if he's being all giggly and stuff. You generally, what you want to take is a sub-perceptible dose. So for example, for mushrooms, I take 50 to 75 milligrams. And if you were to look at that, like it's almost like a speck of dust. It's a tiny amount. And like it's sub-perceptible. So like you don't get any of the impacts, like the body highs or any of that stuff that you get when you take a lot of mushrooms. But what it does is you still get a lot of the behavioral mood impacts. So basically the way I put it to people is, you know, sometimes you wake up on a day and just everything goes right. And you just feel like you're the best version of yourself. When I microdose, that's how I feel every day when I microdose. Right. Wow. And I microdose about twice a week, usually, probably actually maybe 6 times a month. So not exactly twice a week, but like I usually put about 3 days between microdosing. So you can do it as quick as 2 days. You can do it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday off, do it Thursday, right? You can do this quick. I usually put 3 to 4 days between. Microdosing is fantastic, but I also do larger therapeutic doses. And that really depends. Usually not more than 2 months. Sometimes I'll do it a month, never more than a month, closer than a month, but usually 2 to 3 months apart, depending on the medicine. Like if I do a really intense session, then I won't do anything for at least 3 months, right?
Yeah.
But if it's a light session, then maybe a month or two later.
Yeah. Do you ever feel like down? And I know it sounds like we're talking a lot about this, like we're, all for drugs and all experimentation. I know you do this in a very safe manner. You have people that you work with, of course, and you know that you got everything measured out, so you know what you're doing. Do you ever get like a crash? Like if you do other recreational drugs, say like cocaine or whatever, I know there's like a severe dopamine crash afterwards and people can feel really like shit for a few days. Do you ever get any of those symptoms after doing this type of stuff?
So no, not really. MDMA. So you definitely feel like it's not like you do it and the next day you're normal. Like when you do like a big psilocybin or LSD session, especially, man, you're not messed up, but you're different for a few days at least. Right. And so like when I did the 8.5 grams of mushrooms, dude, I didn't do anything else for, I think it was 3.5 months because it took me a long time to not get back to normal, but it's called integration. Right. So you do the medicine and essentially a lot of stuff's kicked up and you do a lot of the work in session, but most of the work is after the session. Right. Because like a lot of the realizations I had or the things I saw, like it kind of kept coming, right? And not like in a mushroom weird way, just like real, just, it's just, you have a space to change your behavior. And so like, that's really the work is after the session, right? But mushrooms and LSD don't do a whole lot to you where you're like all messed up or whatever. MDMA does. MDMA basically depletes all your serotonin. So there's a protocol you generally want to do and a good, like I go to guides, you know, they're all underground because it's not legal yet. It will be in a few years, but they all use pretty strict protocols and usually supplementing with 5-HTP, SAMe, and some other stuff. And so that way it kind of stimulates your body to produce more serotonin. So you get back to normal pretty quickly. If you're with a good guide, then they, they'll tell you what to do and you get back to normal fast.
5-HTP is one of the best serotonin producers, I think, anyways. It's like 50 milligrams, 100 milligrams or so, right?
Sammy, I usually do 400 milligrams.
Okay.
Sammy, I do 400 milligrams. I do 400 milligrams twice a day for 3 days after an MDMA session.
Yeah.
And then the day of the MDMA session that night, I'll take 400 milligrams of 5-HTP. And then I also take like vitamin C before, a bunch of mega dose vitamin C beforehand, because it helps neural connectors. And there's a couple of other things that you do. But honestly, even if you don't do any of that stuff, it's not, it can wipe you out for a day or two. It's not that bad though. It's as long as you rest, you're fine.
Yeah, your body has a good way of bouncing back anyways. It just kind of takes time and, like you said, rest. So are you going to continue to do this infinitely for the rest of your days, or is there like a time deadline at some point you think you're going to stop?
I have no idea, man.
Like, but it's working, right? It's working.
Yeah, if you'd asked me at 28, are you going to be single and fuck girls the rest of your life? I probably said, yeah, of course. And now I'm like, oh, that sounds like the worst. I'm so happy being married and like being whatever. But both are right at different times.
Yeah.
I do know, I can tell my therapeutic journey is not coming to an end, but I think I'm past a lot of the hardest parts of the therapeutic journey. And so let's say maybe another two years maybe, where it's the focus is therapy. And then at some point you fix your shit, you know,
the whole point of it, right.
You fix the old stuff and then it becomes growth. Right. And I'm growing a lot now, but I'm mainly growing because I'm fixing old stuff. But there's a different level of growth where you've gotten to a really stable point and now you're expanding your mind. You're learning new things. You're really making new realizations, going at the higher levels of consciousness, a lot of people call it. So I would guess I will probably use these medicines for, let's call it consciousness expansion, probably for the rest of my life, but at a much lower frequency of use, right? Mm-hmm. Like because when you move up to the things like ayahuasca and 5-MeO-DMT and stuff, like you're not taking that stuff every month, man. Like that's like a couple times a year, maybe 3 times a year at most. And so that's probably where I'll end up.
So when you've done these types of things, do you have a therapist that you're working with or somebody similar to that, that you're working with to help you unpack a lot of these things? Or is it more or less like,
of course.
Okay. Would it be like one of the shaman guys who's doing the medicines with you or somebody else on top of that?
It can be. So the shamans don't really usually do the medicines with you. So sometimes they'll do a little bit, but they're not like sitting around getting high with you, right? Like their job is guiding you and watching you. Like they're your protector. Sometimes they will, like there's some guides I work with where I'll talk to them ahead of time, what my intentions are, what I'm thinking, and then unpack it afterward. I have a dude I talk to every month, who knows me really well, I work with. And then I'll tell you what I've been doing. There's two things that have worked really well for me in terms of integration. One is, acupuncture has been like kind of amazing, which listen, it's been going on for 5,000 years. So clearly there's something, there. And then there's this energy worker. She's like a shaman, but she doesn't do medicine stuff. But I don't know what she does, man. She does this weird chanting and crystals, and it seems like total bullshit. And I'm like, well, I don't know. But man, she'll get me crying on the table. And I'm not taking any medicine. She's not even like talking to me, making fun of me. She gets crazy emotional stuff up. And so a lot of times I'll do a medicine session and then I'll go see her the next week. And so I'm really open. So she's really able to get in and kind of get deep. And it's like, man, she's pretty amazing, dude. And that has, the last 2-3 months, I've really dialed in my integration practice. And I've leveled up a lot as a man.
Nice. I love it, dude. I love all this stuff too. And I've been getting into meditations over the past year or so. And kind of like you too, I think I've steered away from a lot of the stuff thinking it was a lot of bullshit and, you know, it's a lot of like hippie stuff and it doesn't work. But the more I dive into it, the more, even with acupuncture, energy medicine, things like that, there's a lot to it that I think science hasn't been able to explain. So therefore it just kind of like brushed it aside. But there's a lot of shit that goes into that, man, that like there really is an unsolved element there that I think in the next few years we're going to really tap into as, you know, as a society and get the benefits out of it.
So you haven't done have you done psychedelics?
No.
Okay. So I don't talk about a lot of what I saw, what I see in psychedelics with people who haven't. And the only reason is because it sounds totally fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Like, no,
I was going to ask you about it too. And like, what's the craziest shit that you've seen?
Dude, I don't talk about it. And it's not like a secret that I'm like, oh, it's a,
okay.
No, it's just more like you can't talk about it with people who haven't done it because you just sound like a crazy person. Like you sound like a nonsense crazy person. Right. And I get it. Cause like, I remember like listening to like you probably know who Aubrey Marcus is, right? Like he's a good friend of mine. Like he lives like right in my neighborhood. Right.
Yep.
And so like, when I first met Aubrey, I hadn't done any of this and he was like big in ayahuasca and he would tell me all these stuff he's saying. I'm like, you're just a fucking lunatic, dude. And like, I liked Aubrey a lot, but I got so sick of him talking about ayahuasca. It's like, shut up, dude. Like, but now I get it. Now I understand. Right. But the lesson I learned from that was I don't talk about the crazy stuff because until it's sort of like talking about sex with virgins. Mm. Like it's just a useless conversation because virgins don't know what the hell they're talking about with sex.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Once they have sex, now it's a whole discussion because they get it. Right. Yeah. Oh, now I understand. Same thing's true with psychedelics, man. Until you do it, because you are in a realm that is beyond words, that's images and energy and feelings. And I can explain it to you, but it has nothing to do with the experience, the actual experience of it.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. And so let me ask you this then. Don't tell us what you've experienced, but have your experiences changed your perspective on what you believe is real and what we see in this real world, like spirituality type of thing? Has it changed your spirituality?
Yes, 100%. Yes, 100%. Okay. Absolutely, 100%.
So you don't think, in other words, that it's just you taking a plant or a chemical and it's doing something to your brain and just tricking your mind? There's actually, you're tapping into like another place.
If you had told me that before I had taken these medicines, I would have called you an idiot. Now it's what I believe. Wow. Because I've done, like, I absolutely unequivocally. And the reason I believe is not just because of my subjective experience. It's like, I did these medicines and I saw some crazy shit. And then I would go read like what people like Terrence McKenna talked about. I'm like, fuck man, he's describing the same thing, like the exact same thing. Or like, all right, if you want to know what it's like, there's a couple movies that describe it perfectly. So when I did LSD, I saw like all this stuff. Have you ever seen The Dark Crystal? It's on Netflix now. No. And there's a movie called, okay. So like I saw all the shit from The Dark Crystal, but not like because I'd seen it. It was a very different, like I'm like, oh, Jim Henson did that, right? And then like mushrooms, you do mushrooms and it's like, oh my God, it's Avatar. Like, and it's like, I totally get like where these directors are getting their ideas because they're going, Jim Henson was a known mushroom user. He did all in LSD, did all the time. He talked about it all the time. And I'm like, oh shit, he's seeing the same stuff I'm seeing, or I'm seeing the same stuff he saw. Right.
Yeah.
And so like, and all like trip reports are so consistent, man. Like, and again, like, look, I had never read a trip report before I did this stuff. Right. So like, cause I read stuff about MDMA, but not psychedelics. And so I went in clean and I had the experience. And then I went and read the trip reports. I'm like, what the fuck? How did they know what my experience is like? Like, oh, maybe because you're tapping into something, right? I don't know what it is. I have no idea. I just know I very much now, all my opinions on almost everything about energy, physics, reality, God, all changed.
Wow. That is awesome, man. That is really cool. And yeah, I mean, when you look at it that way too, it just kind of opens up the door for so many different things. And I saw a recent article too that you wrote on plant medicines. And I believe, I didn't get to read the whole thing, but I kind of just like skimmed it. I believe you're into the fact that it can heal too, a lot of things, right? Like once you dive into that, it, like you talk about the energy and all that stuff and how we're basically all energy and doing a lot of the work, like reading some of the neurosciences and like quantum physics and all that crazy shit. We find out that we're really just energy anyways, like 99.9% of us from the nucleus to the electron is just empty space. So we're basically just empty space and there's just energy, which really controls us all from, you know, all of our cells and stuff. But if you look at it that way and then you tap into like things like this and like meditations and Joe Dispenza has incredible work like on this stuff. It really is incredible. Like once you can explore that place, what it does to your perspective and also the potential for healing different conditions and not even just mental conditions, but actually physical conditions. And that's kind of what I'm most interested in, is that aspect of it.
Yeah. So dude, like that's not crazy at all. Like that's 20th century physics. So yeah. like Einstein's big discovery, E equals MC squared, is his discovery was that matter is just a form of energy. Not 99.9, 100%. Nothing exists in the universe but different forms of energy. And that's it. Yeah. Like that's not a crazy thing you get on psychedelics. That's high school physics. Right?
Yeah.
And so like what's funny though, man, like I actually know physics pretty well. Like I almost went into like physics chemistry in college. And a lot of what the LSD showed me, because LSD is real harsh, and it was like it showed me what I already knew in physics and chemistry, and then it mapped it right over to like what it was showing me about the universe. And basically what it was saying was, look, you idiot, you already know this. And so I'll give you a really good example. Right now my current belief is that consciousness is energy is just a form of consciousness, that they're basically the same thing, which sounds totally crazy, right? Except if you follow all of the quantum entanglement studies that are going on right now, like that essentially what almost all quantum physics is finding is that matter below a certain level doesn't exist without intention, right? Consciousness is energy.
Yeah.
And so now I'm not saying like, it's not like a hard, no physicist would say that's the way it is right now, because like they operate on very different standards of like, well, I have to know all this sort of stuff before I can be absolutely certain about it, and blah, 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 blah. Academic peer review. Okay, cool. But like all of the data basically is pointing that way. And so it's like this crazy thing where like everything I saw under psychedelics actually mapped exactly to what I know from physics. And it's like, oh God. And then it was just, there's so much more, dude. I used to make fun of the people from The Secret, you know, because like you can't manifest stuff. Like this is same. The stupidest thing. Right. And a lot of what they say is dumb. But if everything is energy, then one of like kind of the corollaries of that is that like we essentially construct our own universe and our own world. And so look, just sitting in, you know, with your thumb up your ass wishing for a car is not going to do anything, but constructing a reality is a different thing. Right. And so like, I mean, you can understand how people construct reality with words here, but if you like what it showed me is like, that's actually fractally true up and down. And like, it's again, like I said, this sounds crazy. Like if anyone's listening to this, it's like, they probably think I'm an idiot right now. And I don't blame them, man, because at that level of consciousness, I would have thought I was an idiot.
Yeah. It's really interesting though, but I think the people listening, I think my audience listening knows that we've covered stuff similar to this in the past, and they kind of understand where I'm coming from with it. And I think they really appreciate your perspective on it too. A super successful guy, you know, best-selling author, 3-time New York, you know, all this stuff. And you saying it and just kind of reaffirming what other guests have said on the past, what I've said on the past, that this shit really is true. And I like that you put it in such concrete terms of that. We know this already. Like physicists know this, scientists know this stuff. Maybe mainstream medicine hasn't gotten around to it yet, or haven't been able to explain it in the right words yet, but people already kind of know this stuff. It's just a matter of if we're going to embrace it going forward and use things like, say, plant medicines to expand our consciousness, or meditation to expand our consciousness, and then tap into these sort of unknown places that we don't fully understand yet, but that we know exist.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
All right. I want to dive back to something that you said earlier, which was problems with your parents and a lot of that stuff growing up. Do you think that led directly to the first book that you wrote? The first one, like a lot of that stuff. Did that have to do then when you were able to overcome that baggage to why you moved on from writing those types of books?
100%. Yes. 100%. Okay. The reason I was so narcissistic is because I had narcissistic parents, and that was my defense. The reason I wanted to sleep with so many women is because I had real issues with abandonment from my mom, and that was how I was working them out. And I eventually realized, really unconsciously, that it didn't matter how many girls I fucked, I was still going to be lonely, and that wasn't going to solve the problem. So then I had to, like, okay, I got to find a different solution to that. And I got bored of all that lifestyle and like nothing wrong with it, man. Like if any dude who wants to do the stuff I did in my 20s and 30s, cool, man. Like no shame in that. Just understand that like it won't solve your problems and that you will have a price to pay later for that. It won't, it's not that bad of a price. I mean, I wouldn't go back and change any of it, man. I mean, look, I might not do some of the most fucked up things I did too, like, cause like,
couple that's, of those, you know, chapters, right, maybe change.
Right, exactly. Like maybe I would be a little bit less of a dick sometimes, but otherwise, like I would, like I had a great time, man. There was a lot of fun, you know? But yeah, of course, dude. Like that's, instead of going to therapy, I drank and hooked up and wrote about it.
Yeah.
That's it. Most people are just dysfunctional. I turn my dysfunction into money and entertainment. That's it.
Do you think there was you think a lot of that was luck or did you have a lot of foresight into what you were doing? Like you had a strategy for making it happen and blowing up as big as you did?
No, I did not have a strategy ahead of time. If I did, I would not have wasted it writing best-selling books. I would have built Google. Right? I've been a billionaire. So, no, dude, like mainly all I was doing was using the skill I had. Like I became a good writer. I was a good storyteller. And I was willing to always tell the truth. And I used that to meet people's needs because there was a huge demand for entertainment and I was willing to entertain people and I was willing to tell the truth. And if you can make people laugh as you tell the truth, like any comedian will tell you, people will beat their way down, beat their way to your door. Right. So, and like I just kind of took each next obvious step, man. Like there was no plan ahead of time. There was none of that, dude. None of it. It was. Now I will say, the luck element was, I had the right thing at the right time. You know, like if I wrote my books now, which I wouldn't, because if I was 25 now, I'd be a different person and whatever. But if my books came out now, they'd do well, they'd sell, but they wouldn't be anything like they were before.
Why? And
if
my books are PC because culture,
it's a different culture, dude. Yeah. It's a different culture, you know, and a part of it is a different culture because of me. Like now, like it's no big deal to talk about this stuff in America, right? Like it was so funny when my books came out, they were a big deal in America, and in England everyone was like, why is everyone like tripping over this, dude? Like because in England they don't have hang-ups about sex and drinking and all that stuff, right? So like it was no big deal there. So if I'd written my stuff in England, no. So the only element of luck is how big do you get, right? But what's not an element of luck is hard work. It's meeting, like everything in business is meeting someone's needs or entertainment, right? And so like it's impossible to orchestrate luck. It's a very possible to get everything else right. And then be ready for the luck that may or may not come. Does that make sense?
Yeah. What are some of the things that you think you did like really well as far as marketing the book and making it, setting yourself up for that ability for the luck to come and just blow you up as big as you did?
There were only two things I think that moved the needle. One is that I put my stories up for free on my website because like that was amazing and people could read them and love them and go buy the book. And I know for a fact, because I have one book free on Amazon and that book has thousands of reviews and it's led to all kinds of sales, right? So that's number one. And number two is I wrote only for my audience, not for myself. Like, I mean, I liked writing and I thought they were funny and blah, 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 blah. But like most writers are writing for themselves in some way, shape, or form. When I was sitting down to write, I was only writing to entertain my friends. Just my friends were the people I had in my mind. Yeah. And then they, you know, because my friends represent millions of people, just it worked that way. So I sold millions of books, but I didn't try and be a writer. I didn't try and be fancy. I just tried to make people laugh. That's it. I tried to meet their needs.
Yeah. I think that's the best way to write for sure. And so many people, I think, miss that key aspect of it. And, you know, you just kind of missed the mark because of that one little thing. It is the whole basis for why you're writing the story and who's going to buy it. And you had a small market, like you're just writing for a handful of your friends, but that target market is also massive when you expand it out to all the other people that age, that demographics, those type of, you know, guys that have similar interests. That's a huge market. But if you're thinking about just a couple, like they talk about in business all the time, having that one avatar, it's the same type of thing as what you did. What do you think the difference was? Because I heard you say this in a different interview of why the movie that came out based on the book didn't do so well. What was the big difference there as far as why that didn't explode and then the book was so popular? And I knew that was like kind of the chrysalis for your change afterwards too. Like you had a big like letdown and all this other stuff, right?
Yeah, it was. I don't know. I honestly don't know, man. Like, I know we picked the wrong director. We picked a lot of the wrong, I mean, the actors were good actors. I'm not sure it was exactly cast right though. But like the director was the biggest problem, which again, I picked. So it's, you know, my fault, but, I don't know, man. It may boil down honestly to like, I was trying to do a movie that was actually like my life. Whereas like the better thing to make a successful movie would have been if I had found a really talented director who had a great vision and let them do it. Because what I realized is that most people's expectation of what my life was like bore no resemblance to my actual life. And so like a lot of people were upset that the movie wasn't their vision of what my stories were like. And I'm like, your vision, fuck off. This is my life, you jackass. But again, that's me like wanting my, like that's the difference. Notice how I said in writing, I'm just trying to make people laugh, trying to serve their needs.
Yeah.
In movie, I'm like, I want my life on the screen. That's all about me. You know?
True. So that's the disconnect there. Like one worked really well when you did it that way. And then you tried to change the formula a little bit and it didn't quite work out well.
Without realizing I was changing the formula, but I did.
Yeah. Exactly. So how did you bounce back from that? Cause I know, like I said before, it was a big letdown. It did maybe a couple million and you thought it was going to do like 100 million. How did you bounce back from that? And what did you realize about yourself that you wanted to change afterwards? Cause didn't that like start a whole journey of self-reflection and all that stuff?
Well, I mean, first off, like I didn't have much to bounce back from. It was just emotional. Like it wasn't my money invested in the movie. I still had money and fame. I was fine. The therapeutic journey I talked about at the beginning, that all started with the movie. Yeah. Like that was the moment that really kind of hammered it home to me that I like all the stuff that I was running from kind of came home. When the movie did shitty.
Yeah. It just made you realize that, you know, you have all this money, you have a lot of things going well, but for some reason there's still a big hole in you.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah.
And so did you just immediately jump into the plant medicine or was there like talk therapy and then all that
stuff? No, dude. It took me, so movie came out like late 2009. I did plant medicine 2018. So it was
That's
like 4 years of therapy and there was all kinds of stuff before I got there, man. It was like, it was a long, long, long journey to get there. Like if I'd done plant medicine earlier, I don't think it would have had much of it wouldn't have had a good impact on me. I would have manipulated it and like it's easy to like do this stuff and think you're doing work but not do it. It's called it's called spiritual bypass, right? And a lot of people do that. But like, that's not doing the work, you know? So I'm glad I waited, or I'm glad it took me a while to find it because now like I'm doing the work. Whereas I don't think I would have before. I wasn't ready.
Yeah. That's interesting. So why aren't you writing some of the, I know you wrote a scribe method book like a year ago, but you said there's more just like a sort of a book for the company that you have scribe now. Do you intend to, or why haven't you written any other books, not of the same voice as before, but of the same type of books of kind of just being more creative? Is it just that you've shifted on and you're kind of more focused on other stuff, or do you intend to go back to writing?
It's funny you're asking that question now because like, the last 6 months, I got challenged by two people who were like very close to me, two like mentors of mine. And they both challenged me to write my next book. But not like, it's not going to be about drinking and hooking up. I don't do that shit anymore. Yeah. So it's like, how did I go from that life to this life? And I'm not sure what I would have said before. I would have made up some bullshit. I mean, I wouldn't have made it up, but I would have had some bullshit answer. But you want to know the real answer? I didn't, man. And yeah. I didn't really realize that until a medicine session, my last one. I think I was afraid, dude. I was afraid. Like, I had as much fun as I had and as cool as my first big thing of success was, there was a lot of, man, I had to deal with a lot of shit. And I brought a lot of it on myself. Like, I'm not even trying to blame other people, man. I created all of it. But, like, I dealt with a lot of shit. And I think I was just... it's not that I'm afraid of going through that again. Like, I'll walk back into any fire if I need to. It's much more about, like, I just, like, ugh. It's like, I didn't want to go through that again. Right? Not without a reason. And so I think I had to go back to that place and kind of process that and really, like, work through a lot of my issues with that so that I can move forward, you know? But, yeah, so I was – the boils down to I was afraid.
Yeah. So you see yourself, though, writing soon, kind of hopping back on that wagon?
I already am. Oh, okay. I don't know when the book will come out. No release date, no idea. I don't even know the name, but I'm writing it.
Cool. And – there's one other thing I wanted to bring up too. How is your relationship today with your parents, and have you forgiven them? Have you gotten over that type of stuff? What is that like?
So I don't really have a relationship with either one. Neither one's really in my life. My dad is a little bit more in my life than my mom. Like, he kind of sees his grandkids every now and then, but my mom hasn't even met her grandkids. Like, I have a 5-year-old. She hasn't met him.
Yeah.
And my wife and I have been together for 7+ years. She hasn't even met my wife. No, we don't talk. I've forgiven them both. Yeah. But forgiving them is not about letting them back in my life. Forgiving them is about me letting go of whatever pain I was holding on to. Right. So forgiveness was about me. But no, my boundary with my mom is pretty clear. Like, she's not in my life. And my dad is only tangentially in my life.
That sucks. I mean, it's good that you've gotten past it, but does it affect you in any way now, or are you just, like, cool about it?
I mean, it did for a long time, of course. Like, it's not easy to have parents that aren't very good and that aren't in your life. But no, now it's like, I mean, like, I'm past it now. Like, I've dealt with it. I thought I had dealt with it before. I hadn't. But I really, like, over Christmas, I had a big thing where, but it was like not going too much into it, but like I really was able to let go of a lot of stuff and let go of that, and like, it's one of those things where it does suck and it's a little sad, but like, I'm not like, it used to weigh me down a lot and it doesn't anymore.
Yeah. Nice. So what you're doing this new thing, Scribe, now, and by the way, you got like a ton of books, you got a mini library I can see in your background. What are some of your favorite books that you've read in the past? Like, some of their favorite authors? You obviously seem well read. Who are the guys that like stick out?
Oh man. What area?
What do you like? Fiction, nonfiction? What are some of your favorite?
No, I mean, that's what I'm asking you. What area do you want me to talk about?
I guess nonfiction first, and then I want to ask you a couple fiction ones.
All right. So nonfiction right now, who I'm reading, this might not be relevant to a lot of your readers, but this guy, David Hawkins, I just love, man. He's a spiritual person, but he was also a doctor and a psychiatrist. And like, he is really rational and analytical. So he explains stuff that like all the woo-woo people talk in nonsense gobbledygook. Hawkins talks about the same topics, but explains them in a really analytical, clear way. And so he has a book, his book I just finished, Letting Go. I just love, it's amazing. It's been incredible for me. It's been totally game changing. So like, his books are a big fan of. For fiction, I just read the entire series of The Celestine Prophecy by James Redfield, which I loved. And like, those books were huge in the 90s. I mean, he sold like 40 million books, and I had never read it. Yeah. And like, I thought they were just for nonsense woo-woo people. I actually loved the books. I thought they were incredible. I'm glad I waited this long, because none of it would have made sense to me before I kind of did plant medicine, and now it all does. He doesn't talk about plant medicine in the book at all, but just like a lot of the concepts are, it's very spiritual and whatever. And so it was good. I liked it.
Nice. Yeah, I want to check out Hawkins, because I haven't heard of him before that. So what you're doing now, the Scribe stuff, What's that all about? Why have you transitioned into helping other people write their books? And what are you guys up to right now?
So we have a company that helps people write, publish, and market their books. We've done some huge books. Like, I know you know who David Goggins is. Yep. We did his book, Can't Hurt Me.
Write that book for him, or how does that work?
I personally did not work on the book. He worked with like my team, writing, editing, publishing, marketing.
We did the whole thing. Write it himself though, or do you guys write?
No. He had a writer. He had a writer. He's a good writer.
Okay. Okay. Adam. Yeah. No, the book's awesome. Incredible.
It's amazing. We did Tiffany Haddish's book, Last Black Unicorn. Yeah. I actually worked on her book, so I did work on hers. And then we've done a ton of other really big books. The reason I do this is like, it's one of those things, man, where it's like, I didn't realize, I was kind of an idiot. Like, I'm obviously really good at writing books and I'm really good at explaining this and teaching this. And I was just like, whatever, I don't care. But so many people kept asking me to help them with their book. And I eventually helped this woman, and then she referred her friends, and they were like throwing money at me. And I'm just like, ugh, I don't want to do this. So like, I got my friend to do it. And then like, it just snowballed and became a company, man. And so like, dude, we're well into the eight figures, and like, I had to hire a real professional CEO. Like, I don't any of this stuff, man. I just work on the stuff I'm good at. Like, I sit around, I read, I build new products, and like, I do this stuff, media. Right. And then every now and then, like maybe I work with two or three authors a year who are like people I really connect with, who I think they have a great message and I specifically can help them. And then we go from there.
Nice. Love it, dude. Tucker, it's been an awesome interview, man. I really do appreciate your time. And I had a blast just chatting with you. I learned a lot myself. What is the last send-off takeaway message you'd like to leave the Elite Man audience? And then a place our listeners can check out your work, what you're up to.
I mean, I don't really have, like, people ask me that a lot. Like, what's your message? I don't have a message, right? No, seriously. Because, like, what I do is I do my work. And then I share my experiences with people about my work, not because they care about me, because it may help them with their work. Right. So like, I'll tell you what, like, I got two things for your listeners. If you want to write a book, right. So my company is like the ultra premium brand. Like our beginner package is 10 grand. And it goes up to 100+. So it's probably out of the price range of a lot of your clients, your listeners, not all, but a lot. But if it is, that's fine, because we have a site called scribebookschool.com that literally explains like I wrote a 500-page book about how to write a book. Wow. And you can get the book for free on the site. Plus has videos where I explain the entire book. I teach you everything we do for our clients. I teach you so you can do it for free. So like, if you want to write a book, that's my gift to you. Go write it. Money's not an excuse. And then if what you care more about is doing the work, like emotional work or growth, you know, just any sort of personal development or growth, I've been writing lessons that I've learned, and I put them on like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram and LinkedIn. Like, I put one a day. Go look at those. If those are super interesting to you, I have like an email list you can like join where I just send up the recap every week. And they're all just lessons I've learned, things that I've learned, right? Like today, the lesson was about how I write to one person. Like when I write with one person in mind, and that not a general audience, and it makes it way better and whatever. Mm-hmm. Most of them are about, I mean, they're just everything, whatever it is, trauma, emotions, business, whatever comes up. So like your audience is like a type of guys who are trying to get better at life and whatever. If that's the thing that they're looking for, that might be able to help.
Nice. Tucker, thanks again for coming on, man. Really appreciate it. And I know our guys are going to love this one. So take care. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, man.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I'd like you to do. And that's this. Subscribe to our podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast episodes and all of our world-class advice absolutely free. Subscribe now if you haven't already and become an Elite Man today. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an amazing review. We really do appreciate it.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at caskers.com.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's pair.com.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.